You're listening to the Physio Matters podcast this month in association with the AACP, and this is session 28. Welcome back to the Physio Matters podcast with me, Jack Chu. Me and the podcast team are rather excited to bring you an episode in association with the Acupuncture Association of Chartered Physiotherapists, otherwise known as the AACP. Last month, me and Brad Neal were grilled by Rob Tyer on iliotibial band syndrome, discussing our articles with CoKinetic, which seems to have gone down a storm. Get downloading the articles if you haven't already. They're out up on a discount at co-kinetic.com. In that podcast, I explained my use of an injection as an adjunct. Then Rob and Jack March discussed their new favourite word, adjunctivitis, in Physio Natters episode 2, which you can find on our YouTube channel. So as you can imagine, we were delighted to be approached by the AACP to discuss acupuncture in session 28. Huge thanks to Jennifer Hodges for arranging the plans and the committee for supporting the episode. The AACP are a very hard-working group of UK physios who practice acupuncture across a range of disciplines. In this episode, I interview the clinical editor for the AACP journal, Dr. Val Hopwood, who was put forward by the committee to chat with me a couple of weeks ago. The interview was recorded literally as the revision of the low back pain guidelines by NICE were released, and so this wasn't discussed specifically, but you'll be able to get a gist of the AACP's positions from their recent press releases and tweets. Visit aacp.org.uk for more info and join me at the end for more about what the AACP can do to help you and the profession. Hi Val, thank you for chatting to me today. But first things are fairly straightforward. Do you mind introducing yourself for the listeners and telling them a little bit about your story so far, your history of advocacy as well, if you don't mind?
Well, hello, my name's Val Hopwood, a physiotherapist. And I've been using acupuncture now since 1982, which is quite a long time, yeah. When you look back. During that time, I've come from having done a very short weekend course to doing a three-month course in China, and then going on to do an MSc in research, looking into acupuncture research, and finally a PhD, doing my own piece of research, looking at acupuncture in the treatment of stroke. So I've sort of gone through a lot of it. During that period, I've often had to defend my practice to other physios or to managers, and also to other professionals. The doctors have been fairly supportive throughout this period, but every now and again, the professional acupuncturists do feel that we're trying to take their territory, and right. We have to reassure them that we don't want what they do. That's not to denigrate it in any way. But their kind of acupuncture is far more involved, and it also involves a great deal more of the Chinese theory, right. Which, while we can be interested in, and I am very interested in it, it's difficult to put in an evidence-based framework. So we have to pull back from that sometimes and just simply say, no, we must stick with the research on this.
Right, so we have to recognise the distance between those, yes. In terms of theories and the science in which you feel you want to live.
The Chinese medicine is what you might call... agreed medicine, you know, it's something that's right. Been going through for a very long time, and the Chinese are quite right to put a great deal of store by it. However, when you look at Chinese history, it has actually changed quite a lot. The form of acupuncture has changed quite a lot over thousands of years, yeah. And so they don't exactly have the Holy Grail either.
No, absolutely.
Much as though, you know, they'd like to say. So we're personally, I'm very happy to look at both sides.
Right, yeah, I mean, that's why it's fantastic for me to be here talking to you about that, because that's exactly what I want to try and do on this particular episode, but also on the show generally, because you're getting shots fired from a whole host of different places, both now and historically. So from in a medical standpoint, people being quite nihilistic about the idea of the fact that it should be almost blanket, there should be a blanket ban, and that it's nothing but quackery. And then the flip side being that it might be the Holy Grail and the magic answer, and something incredibly spiritually perfect that would answer cure world peace almost. You see that far end. So we will come to tease some of those things out. But before we get into maybe some of the more interesting nitty gritty questions about physiotherapy's role within it, would you be able to explain a position as to where you think you are on acupuncture's use generally in musculoskeletal practice?
I think it should be used far more than it is. I think it's very effective. NICE were forced to admit that it was very useful in back pain. There were enough studies at the time for them to look at and say, yep, you know, we should be using this. I think the idea of 12 treatments was a bit more than the average physio can manage, but nonetheless, it was a very good idea and it was a good standard to set. I think for all musculoskeletal things, conditions, particularly pain, it has its use. I've used it very widely myself, and I found it pretty much always useful. The one sadness I think all of us in acupuncture physio world have is that it hasn't had its recognition in knee pain. Osteoarthritis of the knee doesn't seem to get recognition yet. It will do. There's a new study coming up right now where they've actually sort of argued the protocol differently, and Adrian White is leading it, one of the doctor researchers, and that should actually set something up which will be a lot more effective. The difficulty with the knee research was that the NICE program seemed to be looking at the cost of it in a slightly prohibitive way, and that never really got off the ground, because it's difficult to cost things anyway, you know, the qualies and the how many do you need to treat to get such and such a response. This is difficult to do, and there was very little of that kind of information around, so they shelved it effectively. But it will be back.
Yeah, it will rise
oh,
again.
Oh yeah, because it's pretty much a staple of what we do, and physios don't do things if they don't work.
Okay, right. And so with regards to that, I mean, NICE has immediately come up, and acupuncture raises its head in a few different forms of guidelines that I've read, and of course there's plenty that I may not have done. But with the low back pain ones, that was quite a contentious issue on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but
it was.
When it comes to, do you feel that NICE shouldn't be necessarily looking at quality of life years and trying to work out cost effectiveness in
No, I don't really. I think they need to. That's part of their remit. And we should all be looking at that.
Yeah.
But I think we have to get our own research house in order and sort out things like the numbers we need in these trials if we're going to start asking those kind of questions.
Okay. And so say in that circumstance, if the studies aren't necessarily having the end numbers required to make those calls, are you suggesting perhaps that until that occurs, it should be remaining within those guidelines? Because the guidelines need to be lent on the evidence. If the evidence isn't sufficient, which you're seemingly agreeing on, then...
Not always, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. And so let's talk about that then in the back pain thing then.
Well, I think as physios, if we want to use it, and we do, we should look to our own departments and do a bit of our own research. Mm-hmm. Currently I'm the clinical editor for the journal, and just this month I've put something in saying you really should be publishing what you do. And the reason I'm saying that is because we take case studies from physios all the time. They have to produce case studies when they train.
Yeah.
And some really good ones get into the journal, and that's lovely. And what people seem to fail to realise is that a case study is a scientific document. It is evidence.
Yeah.
One case study gives you an idea. Doesn't take you much further than that. But then the next thing to do is to look at a series of case studies. You've got one patient you treated this way. In your referral list, you may well have two more that you could actually do the same thing for. Do it. Document it.
Right.
Make sure that you've got the details identical each time. And then, you know, if you've got six case histories, that's actually a good piece of research, because that's almost enough to take you on to actually doing some more full-blown work. Myself, when I first started looking at this, I used acupuncture for stroke recovery, and I got a series of six case studies, which I put into the physiotherapy journal at the time. And then when my supervisor and I were looking for money for a full-blown RCT, we used that as evidence, and it was accepted. This, there is something here that has the germ of an idea which we could be out there testing.
So things can then build from
that. It starts from a single case study,
yeah,
and we need to do a lot more of that. I mean, I think the problem is that physios are so overworked that they really don't always have time to write up their notes, never mind, you know, write out something in greater detail. But if you set up some kind of chart flowchart for yourself where you can actually be ticking boxes for a bit of that,
yeah,
and just filling in the numbers every now and again, you can, in fact, amass a great deal of evidence.
I think you'd probably get fairly universal support for that in various ways, in that a case study form and a case series form, the ways in which that can lay on evidence. However, with what NICE are doing, they can't necessarily, I mean, I imagine you'd agree, can't look at individual case series
no,
and do so. And so if they are looking at the body of work that we're hoping for, you, from what you're suggesting you're hoping for in the future, mm, to make this the methodologies more robust and the numbers greater, mm, in the meantime, when they are publishing guidelines in musculoskeletal practice, can you therefore understand why the jury might still be out, or why they might land on a certain side of a fence that means that they don't advocate acupuncture?
Yes, I think they're playing it very safe.
Right.
But interestingly enough, we've had somebody in the scientific system, Professor Edzard Ernst, who's been pretty much demonised as being against acupuncture and everything complementary. And I don't think that's true at all. I think he's just got a very precise register for what's good research and what's bad research.
Mm-hmm.
And he has, in fact, been a critic for a long time, but his criticisms are actually now weakening. He's actually saying that acupuncture is useful, proven, for certain things. And he's included headache and migraine, which certainly wasn't in the list before. And he's quite comfortable with it being used for arthritic pain.
Mm.
So, you know, things are actually slowly spreading, but it's taking time. But if they do it that way, then at least we can be sure of the quality.
Mm.
And I think that is an issue at the moment. The quality is questionable sometimes.
Okay, so Ernst set a high bar, and certain things are risen above that.
Yes,
is that where we're at? Okay.
Yes.
And I mean, it's an understatement to say that the jury's out on this next question, but I have to talk, and I tend to talk about mechanisms quite a bit, in which we look at the biological plausibility of certain features. And so, although it's a difficult one, we could be here for hours, so we'll do our best. But can we discuss the proposed mechanisms and perhaps concentrate on some things that you feel might be the main factors at play when it comes to that?
Oh, I don't know about the main factors. I think there are so many.
Mm.
There are so many things that actually could be part of it.
Okay.
And every now and again, you know, something comes out and people start using the functional MRI scans, and somebody somewhere says, hey, we could look at the effect of acupuncture in the machine. And, you know, this is a completely new test and a completely new idea when you actually look at how things might be working in the body. But at the moment, I think we are, if we look at pain relief, we've got things that happen in the spinal cord, we've got things that happen in the midbrain, and things that happen in the pituitary and the hypothalamus. So we've actually got sort of three runs, really. But what actually happens when the needle penetrates the skin, you get a local response, and everyone's fairly comfortable with that. It activates the A-delta fibers, and that gives you heaviness and distension. It activates the number 2 fibers, and that gives you numbness. And then you've got the C fibers, which are a lot slower, and they give you soreness, sort of just general achiness. And that put together is what we call Daichi in sort of, you know, acupuncture parlance.
Yeah.
It is just the needling sensation.
Yeah.
You know, you can call it either one. Daichi is shorter to write.
But some people have... Sorry, to just try and clarify that. When people are experiencing those sensations, some more than others, mm-hmm, some not at all, mm-hmm, and so that sometimes it offers contention in that even there, where people, if there are some people are having that specific and very broad response, I have to admit and say that when I have certain, not necessarily with certain points, but the response that I have when needles are put in me, regardless of what I've come to know or what I knew at the time it was first done, is I get a quite overt response to that. Other people, that typically those that are less open-minded to these sorts of conversations than I, might have had needles put wherever someone wanted and experienced, mm-hmm, literally nothing other than a sharp pricking sensation.
Well, that's because you're playing with the superficial nerve system, and we don't know where the superficial nerves run, do we? You know, we know the main ones. It's like the arterial system. We don't know where the tiny vessels are. So you might get a direct hit with the acupuncturist needle, or you might not.
Mm-hmm.
But I teaching acupuncture, one of the things I would always say is that you treat your patient three times before you say, I'm not getting any response. So you would actually go for this needling sensation, because the Chinese are quite convinced it's essential. I'm not entirely sure that we are from a Western point of view, but it seems a desirable thing. I mean, you're there anyway, so you might as well.
Try and elicit as much of a response as you can.
Exactly. You don't want to inflict pain anyway. Yeah. But if people have been needled and they're getting the chi or needling sensation, they will say to you, it's not actually painful. It's a strange feeling. It's not something that I identify directly as pain.
Yeah, well, I'd certainly agree
fullness,
with that myself.
You know,
yeah,
or a sort of warmth, or you know, there are very ways of, many ways of describing it, as many as there are people. But that is something which we're not controlling, but we're trying to elicit this response.
Yeah,
and that's the response that seems to have the knock-on effect in the tissues.
Okay. Yeah, and so when it comes to those, I suppose that it's harsh to bring it into two particular mechanisms before we talk about the P word of placebo. But before we do that, we say these more tissue based mechanism that's often postulated. Also, this effect that you're describing, which is the effect on the nervous system, which is what you've immersed yourself in study through to PhD. And so, if we look at the neurological description that you're mentioning there, there is a suggestion that we know through other forms and modalities and treatment that the nature of all sorts of things of expectation and the way that pain is modulated in the body means that any downregulation, for want of a better word, could be elicited through a whole host of means.
Yes, it could.
And so what is it that you're proposing acupuncture does differently to these other things when it comes to interaction with the nervous system?
I don't know that it's possible to be had dogmatic about
it. No, and I wouldn't want you
to. But there are certainly some things out there that have made a difference. We've got now research that's been done using functional MRI scans of the brain. Now we can read a functional MRI scan, then we're actually beginning to see that there can be differences produced in the brain tissue from an acupuncture treatment. And certainly there's a very nice series done on carpal tunnel syndrome,
right,
which they've been around a long time now, but they're very good, and they show some very nice pictures of an activation of the painful area for that particular nerve, and they've also got changes in that throughout treatment. So we can see that these things are happening. Now, you might argue that they would happen with placebo anyway, and that's a reasonable argument, but what also happens is that we have other work where people have actually tried to isolate the placebo effect. There is a very neat study that actually begins to show some of the problems with placebo and also indicate that perhaps there's more than a placebo effect when you're treating with acupuncture. It was done by Pariente et al. And the title is Expectancy and Belief Modulate the Neuronal Substates of Pain Treated by Acupuncture. And this is a very neat little study. There were three interventions given to the patients. They all were suffering from OA thumb. So basically, they all had the same localized kind of pain.
Mm-hmm.
The patients were first of all touched with blunt needles, but they were aware that the needle would not pierce the skin and they didn't have any therapeutic value. So they were quite clear about what it wasn't going to do.
Yeah, okay.
Scans showed that only the areas associated with the sensation of touch were activated in their brains, which is what we'd expect.
Okay.
Intervention two, those patients believed that the treatment was real, and scans allowed, they showed an area of the brain associated with the production of natural opiates, substances that act in a non-specific way to relieve the pain. And these were activated in these patients who were being treated with the Streitberger sham needle.
Right.
So the operator knew that it wasn't working, but the patients didn't. Then intervention three was real acupuncture. The same needle again, same kind of needle was used, but this time it entered the tissues.
Yeah.
And as well as the opiate centre, another region of the brain, the ipsilateral insula, was also activated during the treatment. And this is a pathway known to be associated with acupuncture treatment, and it is thought to be involved in pain modulation.
Okay, so these three arms trying to tease out that understanding of where the mechanism of expectation and what might be more traditionally considered placebo, and where the difference appears when real acupuncture is done.
Yes.
Now, that was a really interesting study that I hadn't heard about. 2005, we talked a little bit about it off the microphone. 2005, a while ago, and although it's probably not got as much airtime as we'd like, is it fair to say that actually a frustration that sort of research hasn't been extended into larger numbers or hasn't been given as much attention? Because the placebo debate rages on.
Yes. I think it is fair to say it is not being given enough airtime. There are probably other studies out there, but I've not seen them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there are other ones which may have been larger. But that was just a very sophisticated little study, and it makes its point. It needs to be elaborated.
Yeah.
But it also means that if you are looking for what can we call a pure response to acupuncture, using a needle of any kind is probably a no-no, because the sham needles do have an effect when they enter the skin. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah.
We, as acupuncturists, would say they don't actually have as much an effect as true acupuncture, but the difference between them is not great enough to be convincing to everybody, and it is one of the problems with research at the moment.
Right, and
but given more patients, we can overcome that.
Right, okay. That's the presumption pending further numbers,
that's
right?
The answer.
No, that's brilliant. Yes. Right, so that's a great way for us to sort of try and address some of those sort of, shall we call it, dissenting voices. So the idea, and I mispronounce his name forever in the day, David Colquhoun or Colquhoun, or I have no idea.
I know who you mean.
But you know who I mean, I don't necessarily care to be clarified on exactly how to pronounce his or mispronounce his name, but the idea is that it's a theatrical placebo that is being, and there's an underlying suggestion that it's almost sinister in the fact that people that might be still administering it would have some motives far more questionable. Now, in those sorts of circumstances, that's a suggestion that the jury isn't out and that it is nothing but an expectation-based thing. What's the comeback on that without swinging it too far the other way?
It's a difficult question to answer directly. There is certainly enough information out there. There's enough research out there to convince people who want to use it that it's okay. But then you've got the people who would never use it because they believe that there is something inherently wrong with it. And these are hard people to convince.
Mm.
When I first started with acupuncture, there was a movement to convince physios who were using needles that they were actually demonic in some way. And they were the works of the devil. And we had a lot of trouble with hardcore religious people who believed that there was something inherently wrong in trying to disturb the chi or the body spirit with these needles.
Wow.
I have to say, in the early days, we had a lot of vicars' wives who were physios also leaving.
Wow.
They were not convinced and they didn't want to be part of it. But the truth of the matter is that these are practices that stem from way before Christianity, way before religion even. We really don't think that there's anything like that to worry about.
No.
But people will worry if they can't explain the effect. So it's quicker for us in the long run to actually get to these mechanisms and pull them apart. So quite clear what we are doing.
So a line,
close.
And that's it. So it's a line of inquiry that warrants further probing rather than a blanket suggestion that it's nothing, but also not going too far the other way to suggest it is tinkering in something that we shouldn't be touching.
Well, you know, if we can do blood transfusions and the like, I think we can not worry too much about putting an acupuncture needle.
Okay. Now, when it comes to the research that's been mentioned a little bit before, and we'll tease some of that out because we mentioned the NICE guidelines, etc. But with the sham acupuncture that clearly has an overt physiological effect, and consistently, acupuncture and whatever the attempt at a sham, they both tend to favour, the trials favour those arms over any waiting list control or normal care, and so typically they both do well. Why might it be that the higher the numbers, some of the German work that's been published, there doesn't seem to be a demonstrable difference between a minimal treatment group in terms of the position of the needle or the depth of needle penetration or just a prick sensation and the more traditional, shall we say, or the normal acupuncture.
What I'm thinking is that certainly the work that Hugh McPherson has been doing and what he was speaking about at the weekend was saying that the more carefully you've formulated your sham, the more effective it's going to be, because somehow it will be more sophisticated and it will have more involved within it to make the patients believe it. Yeah. In the bad old days, when we were first doing this kind of research, you know, 20 years ago, yes, you could stick a sham needle in anywhere, but it was quite obvious to the patient that if you stuck a sham needle in their knee and you're actually treating their elbow with your other needles, then there was something wrong, something adrift. And they were not convinced. And if they're not convinced by the placebo or the sham, then your research is invalid.
Yeah.
So you have to get cleverer with your shams so that the patients really do believe them.
Okay.
And that, of course, sets up the problem.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, we're in a tricky situation. I could tell a story about this from my own research. When I was treating stroke in my stroke study to see if acupuncture would actually make any difference to stroke recovery, I was treating both sets of patients. I treated both the sham and the real mm-hmm. acupuncture, because we decided if somebody was going to be doing the sham as a job, you know, throughout the process, they would become extremely discouraged, and probably the patients would pick up from them that they knew it wasn't going to work anyway.
Right, okay.
So it was up to me to be a better actor than that.
Okay.
Because it was my project and I knew what I was doing. So that's the way we worked it. And by and large, it seemed to be okay. But for the sham, we had a deactivated TENS machine. The lights flashed. We had adhesive electrodes, which were put in exactly the same places as where the needles were going on the patients who were getting real acupuncture. But they just had the acupuncture, and also they did have electroacupuncture too. So the two treatments would look similar, and they had to, because they might be on the same ward.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get people to consent to being in a study, and they also consent to the possibility that they may have the real treatment or they may not. But yeah, they have to be convinced when they're sitting beside each other.
Of course, to strengthen that,
yes,
that comparative
exactly. Otherwise,
arm.
It's an invalid placebo. But the interesting thing about that was that I was having to be very, very careful about giving too much to the non-treatment patients, because I'm a physio, I wanted to treat them.
Yeah.
And so my instinct was to give them perhaps more advice than I was giving the others. And so I really throttled back on that, and I was very careful that I didn't do that.
Yeah.
But I was rather shocked once when I came onto one of the wards in the bigger hospital, and I was told that the patient I was looking for had discharged himself the day previously. And I said, why? And they said, oh, it was because of the treatment. And I was a bit horrified. I thought, what, me?
They
said, no. He said the only person who ever treated him well in this ward was the lady who came to do the acupuncture.
Right.
And he was in the control group.
I see.
So that's when I sort of started really thinking hard about what am I doing here? Because okay, it is very difficult.
Yeah, so you're trying your best to if there is a theatre, you're trying to apply the same. Or if there's sterility, you're trying to apply the same.
Mm.
And that is really difficult, especially when there's tricky parts with regards to blinding.
Well, you know, it's important. You know, this is the trouble. As the researcher, you're well aware
that important.
This is a badger trap just waiting for you.
Yeah, it's a factor at play, and recognition of that means that you can try to counter it as best possible. Is, though, that, let's just use an example of an ONE patient, and especially the GERAC trials from the German study groups that are doing the large scale.
Yeah.
Studies, they have deduced that putting needles in knees is certainly warrants their time and money, and they've favoured it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily care where the needles are put or how they're put, and they don't necessarily, they've not been able to quantify a sort of dose in which they will support. Is that unusual, considering your position on the true acupuncture, if we call it that?
Yes.
Would have a more neurological effect.
I think we have to look to what the difference between true acupuncture and kind of pragmatic acupuncture is.
Okay.
Physiotherapists are taught a fairly basic form of acupuncture, which relies a lot on anatomy. We know where the nerves run already. We have a very good picture in our minds of what the the nervous system is doing, where it goes, and how it functions. So it makes a lot of sense to physios to ask them to treat in a segmental fashion. If you want to be treating the knee, then which are the nerves that are likely to be involved around the knee joint itself, or the muscles which actually act on the knee joint? So we have a very pragmatic way of looking at it, I think. But at the same time, if you understand your Chinese medicine, then you might be looking to increase the general circulation in the lower limb, and that would give you some other points that really come straight from the Chinese theory. And you might also want to get some kind of crossover between a yin channel and a yang channel to sort of merge the flows or even the flows out. You begin thinking in a very different way, so you may use other points. At the same time, those points may be the ones you used as a physio anyway.
Right.
You know, they're very likely to be, actually, because, you know, the Chinese don't pick things on the end of your nose to treat a knee joint. It isn't going to happen.
Okay.
They themselves have a very serious logic. And often the two logics combine and are almost the same thing.
Yeah.
But when they're not, then it becomes quite hard to understand what the results are telling you, I think.
Right.
I don't know if that explains it.
No, it does. I think it certainly begins to. I think when things like those additional points are, or we go into Chinese medical reasoning, which I'll probably try and frame a question around in a second, but when those points are introduced for various reasons or various reasoning, as the research becomes more developed, is it therefore surprising, considering the clinical outcomes that are being proposed, that they don't necessarily translate to the outcome measures being tested in the trials?
Well, they often do.
Just not to significance.
I think researchers are often afraid to admit to it. And there's been a very sort of popular move when you're treating musculoskeletal things to give yourself a points pot. That's the sort of phrase that we use a lot now.
Okay.
And in that points pot are likely to be the ones that are of segmental origin, definitely,
right.
Because we're physios and because they're scientific.
Okay.
But at the same time, if you've got any sense at all, you may slip in the odd influential point from Chinese medicine.
Yeah.
You know, gallbladder 34, muscles and joints. I mean, come on, what are we going to be treating? You know? So that one goes in. But at the same time, because of where it is, you're quite likely to use it anyway for knee pain.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, it gets a bit foggy.
Okay.
But Chinese medicine itself, whilst it's quite odd and weird and often difficult to understand, it is a consensus medicine, which makes it at least a structured history. You know, people, the original Chinese doctors would teach their sons what they were doing, and they would sort of change things, mutate things slightly as they went through. They would make them slightly better, take things out that didn't work. So all the time it was a medicine of change, maybe only small change, but nonetheless it was going through in that way. And so that makes it a consensus medicine, because people did what worked, added something, didn't work, took it away, added something else that worked, so that stayed in. And so you have this build-up of ideas and theories.
Right, so you're proposing sort of the peer review of history and then the way in which things would be naturally...
I think it's not to be thrown out entirely.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I would, you know, it's difficult to say this is evidence-based medicine because the way we understand it, it isn't.
Yeah.
But as the Chinese use it and as they did use it, it has come through in a fairly refined way.
Right. Okay. So if it was as haphazard and as clumsy as is sometimes proposed, it wouldn't be the shape that it is now,
and a
powerful movement. That's a really interesting point. I think with traditional Chinese medicine, just to put a line in the sand myself, is that when I was learning about this and exposed to a new reasoning framework, I got my teeth into it. I was loving it. In all honesty, it was hilarious. I thought if I can get good at this, it'd sit well within the business card. Being Jack Chu, people assume me to be
That's
of Oriental
true.
Origin anyway, and so I thought this is a big win for me. And so, do you think that the links, both historic and that remain to traditional Chinese medicine, do you see them as a help or a hindrance?
I see them as a help, but then I always have. I mean, that's why I started learning it in the first place. I read a book, I don't know, hundreds of years ago now, about acupuncture. I just got it down to the library and read it for interest and thought, hello, I could do this. And then I found someone to train with, and that was Dr. George Lewis, who's from Southampton.
Right.
And he was brilliant because he was quite happy to train physios. So, you know, that's how it all started off, really. I went and watched him in practice before I decided to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on it went. But he had trained in Nanjing, which is where I subsequently went. And I thought, I'll go to Nanjing and I'll learn more about the Chinese medicine, because George's version was quite pragmatic and quite westernised, and it was really what I practice now as well. But that, I decided I'd go to China to search the Holy Grail.
Right.
And I got to Nanjing and I worked there for 3 months, and I never really came across true Chinese medicine. They were doing the same as we were, and they were very practical, and they were doing very much what was known as the barefoot doctor style. While I was there, you know, very straightforward. You've got a painful shoulder, these are the points you use. And it's derisively called cookbook medicine in the UK by the acupuncturists, who have every right to call it that because they go into much more detail, but nonetheless it works. And the Chinese themselves were using it when I was out there. So I had to come back here to learn more about Chinese theory.
But the Chinese, when it comes to our calibration measure of evidence, the Chinese notoriously don't control well. So they suggest it works, but they're not controlling their trials. Why is that?
Because they believe that it's actually unethical to deny a patient treatment.
Right.
So if you're going to test acupuncture, then you give them normal acupuncture and you add in the doctor or the specialist's own version, which is going to be the real treatment they're testing. Because that invalidates it completely from our point of view, because everyone's getting it.
Yeah.
They're much better now. I mean, you know, they're not stupid. They've worked their way through the system and they do very good studies now. But they have this aura of very poor scientific control hanging over them still.
Right. So it's the equivalent of we wouldn't deny patients baseline robust education as a means standard. Their standard is that why would we deny even the control
their
basic
answer to anything like that is we know it works.
That's really tricky, isn't it? Right. Which is why we often find ourselves leaning on the more European studies. So it brings us to
of us read Chinese either, to be fair. So
that's
you
a
know,
good point.
That's another obstacle, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It needs to be translated.
Absolutely, no, good point. I think then bringing us on to that being the traditional Chinese medical reasoning, there's also a very tissue-centric reasoning that can be applied to putting needles in people, dry needling being ever more popular in lots of different ways. Mm. What's your take on that swing of the pendulum towards something more tissue-centric?
Well, apart from being incredibly irritated by the term dry needling, because nobody else uses wet needling.
Okay.
I know it's a medical thing. They wanted to make it clear that they weren't putting any fluids in or taking fluids out.
Okay.
But acupuncture is like that. You don't have to call it dry needling.
Fine.
But dry needling is often used in trigger point work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very Western in many ways. And it follows ideas that are in Western medicine. It can be very effective indeed. I mean, I would quite cheerfully mix all three if I were treating a patient, depending on what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm treating a joint area, then I might use some points for the joint. And I will be locating those points according to the segmental distribution of the nerve. If I also want to do something about swelling, perhaps in the limb, then I might also pick up on some of the bigger Chinese acupuncture points, which are distal, which will help me control the flow of blood or qi, whichever you want to call it, in that area.
Okay.
So that's sort of two things that I might well be doing. And if I find there's a hot spot, then I'll put a trigger point needle in it as well.
Right, that's it.
And the Chinese would call it an Asha point.
Yeah.
They're not averse to hotspots.
No.
They invented them. So, you know, you've got three theories all warring against each other, if you like. But as far as I can see, that makes very good all-round acupuncture.
And so pragmatically, you'd then apply and mix and match them. Mm. When it comes to, say, a more tissue-centric model of needling the insertions to tendons or to needle certain tissues in the tendinopathic or in some form of
tissue
distress.
I don't like producing
distress.
Pain in patients. That's something that worries me. I've seen a lot of trigger point work done in demonstrations where the patient could hardly keep still.
Yeah, well, periosteal pecking is another one I've seen
at the
plantar fascia.
It would be my absolute last port of call.
Right.
People, I mean, it's But there is a real sort of criticism to be made here of me, because I don't like inflicting pain. My theory is, as a physio, I actually take it away, I don't give it. And if I do give it, it's short, sharp, and, you know, it's directed.
Okay.
But I've spoken to doctors who use these methods, and they will say, yes, you can get the same result as I do, but you'll have to have treated your patient probably 5 times. I can do it in one.
So they're suggesting
the patient limps away in tears, but it will, but, you know, it's better. So I don't know. I'm not prepared to argue the case anymore.
Okay. And so the more, like you're saying, a more pain-free version of care... Well, might be
sits better with physios to me.
Yeah, I know, but I think exposing the tissue to the stresses and strains of things like exercise, or what we know of a painful loading of tendons, is that counter to your sort of
ethos?
No, not
really, because I think there is a reason for that. It's not just a pain; it is something where you actually understand what's happening to the tissues inside, and you are instituting a stretch. Now, stretches can be very painful, you know, but they shouldn't remain so. And you're controlling, aren't you?
Okay. With regards to what we've been talking about already is the way in which acupuncture might influence symptomology, mainly pain, but we've also talked about various other things. If we then, do you feel that is its realm, or do you feel that acupuncture can influence pathology or disease modify, for want of a better word?
It's a difficult one to hold on to, but yes, I do.
Okay.
Again, a conference I was at over the weekend, a Dutch researcher, Peggy Bosch, has been working with acupuncture as a treatment for schizophrenia and for depression, with an awful lot of success. And when I started to talk about, you know, the different levels of activity and the in the methodology of the acupuncture itself, there is stuff happening in the brain, there's stuff happening in the higher centres, and we are definitely changing mood, there's no doubt about that. And we are also definitely, I think most people will tell you it's true that you do change sleep patterns.
Again, are we talking about the way in which they influence symptoms, or are we talking about them actually influencing the problem? Because the causal problem...
I think that's
problems.
Chicken and egg, isn't it?
Okay.
Really, because your pain goes away, you feel better.
Okay.
You feel better, so you go out and walk more, your pain goes away.
the action of the way in which that person then engages back with their function is the thing that can then change the problem as well. So let's say OA knee is a good example. We're not suggesting that acupuncture would change the disease process, but if it was to offer relief.
It offers relief, so you get on it and you strengthen the quads.
Okay.
You know, it's very, very simple, isn't it?
well,
you know, it's difficult in a way to take the credit for it, because that's always going to happen with physio anyway. So
okay.
Acupuncture is just another tool we can use.
Mm.
One of the reasons why we recommend that people use the MIMOPS measuring scale, have you come across
yes.
that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very good because it allows the patient to name their own goals. Mm-hmm. You can, in fact, say, okay, I want to see that your knee is bending a bit more than this, you know, we'll get to this range or that range. But at the same time, what is it you can't do? Well, I can't climb the stairs. Okay, so we'll see if you can climb the stairs by time we've done 3 treatments, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you're actually adding in something that the patient really cares about, because just bending your knee is kind of okay, but it doesn't say very much. If you can actually climb the stairs and you couldn't, then that's going to elevate mood and everything, really.
Yeah, so we can't attribute,
so
it's difficult to attribute
and,
cause.
We should try and measure these other things is really the point I'm trying to make.
Absolutely, and you've landed where I think pretty much every guest of ours has landed, is that we're trying to restore function, and it's a means of doing that.
Yes.
But from what I gather, you're not, in my ONE example, you're not suggesting that acupuncture is disease modifying in a direct sense.
No.
Right. Okay.
Some things it can do. I mean, there seem to be some things where it does seem to get rid of shingles, for instance. If you treat quickly enough, you can stop them having a sort of ongoing effect, but you do have to get in there fast.
And there's also, I sometimes try to, but I haven't in this circumstance ventured far outside of musculoskeletal understanding or the neurology and the, mm-hmm. particularly in headache with acupuncture, mm-hmm. except for the recent understanding of allergic rhinitis and hay fever, more traditionally known. Oh. And so just to mention that as an aside, that seems to be offering favourable longer-term or at least medium-term results on seasonal hay fever. So that would suggest more than just a symptom relief.
It sounds like a desensitising, doesn't it? That's going on in the nasal tissues. I don't know where or how that comes. You know, it sounds like it. And certainly it seems to work.
But again, there seems to be some promising lines of inquiry once more in things that wouldn't necessarily sit perfectly with this idea that it's purely symptom modifying. But in pain sense, we'd probably say that the evidence would be more in that line. So that brings me, we keep referring to the evidence and none of it, you know, no one can read it all, but I think because you've been involved in research in acupuncture for many years, and for the reasons you've mentioned already, stand by its use in musculoskeletal practice, many people feel, and myself included, I'll admit, find being an evidence-based needler is increasingly feeling untenable in some ways in light of the current evidence base. As I understand you, you've explained as to why you would disagree, but why do you feel that split exists, and what's your take on the extent in which it could be used? Because you'd said before you think it should be used more. How much more? And how might we be able to sort of tease out where the middle ground lies?
I think we should be looking at using it in outpatients more. I mean, the triage thing that is being suggested in lots of hospitals where physios are out there in A&E, this would be a good thing to be looking at. At the moment, I'm just negotiating for a reprint of a paper by Richard Nemtsov, who is, he's retired now, retired major in the US Army, and he's got what he calls battlefield acupuncture, which has been used for quite some time now. And that's very good. He's simply using ear points to get rid of immediate pain. And that is, you know, good pain relief and very effective pain relief, and the army has found it to be so, but it can be done on the battlefield without a soldier necessarily needing to take his clothes off, which is not always very convenient. These are very sensible situations.
Okay.
And the paper we're looking at is actually looking at the application of this to NATO forces, so most of the NATO military organisations should be teaching it to their doctors.
Wow. Okay. So that's broadening scope of acupuncture in a big way.
And that's going to ear acupuncture, you see, which is shoots out of the water idea of segmental distribution.
Yeah, that offers a new angle, doesn't it? And so I suppose that we're landing on the notorious moderate angle of any adjunctive treatment it's often suggested it has a place, is often the sort of default position on it, and that's where we've come to. So can we try and work out where said place might be? So we've got a few bits of little measuring sticks as to how we might try and do that.
I think we can leave it to the individual physios to decide what it is they treat
and
whether it has any relevance to them or not. You'd be surprised how many physios in women's health are actually using acupuncture. It's a bit of a minority interest, but nonetheless, there's a lot of them out there. And to look at what's there, what's available, what research might support what you want to do, there's nothing better than to go to the AACP evidence book. This has been produced and sent out to every member, and the research in there is good. It's been selected very carefully, and it's under different headings.
Yeah. And there's often updated editorials, most recently by Cummings et al. To discuss the where are we at, what's new.
Mike Cummings is excellent, actually. He's got a very good system going, and he's very reliable.
Because there's seldom other adjunctive methods seldom so open with where the land lies.
Absolutely.
Are they? And that's nice.
I mean, I think it is open, and there is. Palpable endeavour the whole time.
That's a great way of putting it,
That sounds horrible, doesn't it?
No.
But it's a good thing, it is actually out there and we are working on it all the time.
Okay.
And I think that's important. And I would say that, it could be used more. I think the physios who are in various specialities could be looking at it.
Yeah.
And I would encourage them to do that. And there are specialist courses run by the AACP all the time, particularly for headache or particularly for neck or areas of the body are selected
and more particular
concentrated point. On, okay. And they make very good CPD.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you need to understand that it isn't going to work for everything, and you also need to understand, perhaps, which is perhaps more difficult to get hold of, is that your friend might be able to do it, but you might not. Sometimes we have a sort of natural affinity for treating people with acupuncture and can do the more esoteric things because there is somehow a conviction in what we do. And here I'm zooming straight back to Blue Sea, but I realise. But sometimes people who are much more forthright don't have so much success. Sometimes they have more. This depends on the patient, doesn't it? How
yeah.
they receive it.
And our communication and the Absolutely. Way in which we integrate all our modalities.
All of this. And also, there is an issue, I think, like if you were massaged by Physio 1 on one day and then massaged by Physio 2 the next day, you would feel it different. You know, you would receive the treatment in a slightly different way because they're different people.
In different context and time has
different
passed and all sorts.
Who
different
knows?
Different
yes.
position and you're in emotionally at that moment
exactly.
in time. Very
and
tricky.
Your symptoms may have changed slightly as well. So you've got this sort of terrible variability with okay. patient care. But one of the things that I'm very anxious people do is to get hold of this evidence book and give it a good read.
Yeah.
And also work with the commissioning document. Because acupuncture is it's very economical. Trusts are so worried that they won't be able to afford this. It's a new thing. They don't want to even look at it. But you have to convince them that, first of all, the workforce is already there. It's already doing stuff.
Right.
And whilst the workforce itself might complain that it's seriously overworked, which I think is perfectly justifiable,
yeah.
Nonetheless, acupuncture isn't going to take that much more extra time. And at the moment, a lot of physios are looking at group clinics where the physios are treating groups of patients, you know, in one
yeah.
one area. And that is a very much more economical way of using their time.
I've been hearing about that. And I'm going to probably just park the economic bit for a second because mm. I think it's a great point. I think we'll come back to it. Mm. But just to come back to what you were saying before about the... when we're thinking about where is its place, that's not for us to dictate that and try and find
not
that
entirely.
Place. But when it comes to the individual physiotherapist who might not be picking up the book that you're quite rightly waving at me, is the... yeah, I wish we had a video. It's, it is a great document, as I've said. Mm-hmm. There's lines in the sand being drawn and position statements left, right and centre and people musing these things. And as I said, the way in which that's being done is a really great yardstick for other professional networks, clinical interest groups, whatever we call them.
Yes.
But to leave it to the individual to try and find its position, he's offering an awful lot of credit to them working within a specific scope of practice. And considering the CSP's evidence-based practice line in the sand that's been recently drawn, what if in women's health, let's use that as an example because it came up, if there was a physiotherapist postulating that the needles that they were putting in to a pregnant lady for SPD was these are for your pelvic pain, I'm going to put a couple of other points in there which will help the embryonic development to rid you of your baby having birth defects, okay, we're starting to towards something.
Nobody's going to say that.
Why not though?
Well, they would have absolutely no shred of evidence for it, either in Western medicine or in Chinese medicine.
But they might have a personal case series.
That's not such good evidence. You've got a personal case history, you work it up, you take it through the stages.
Mm.
You can't make any claims on one case.
No. I'm not for a second suggesting people go and do that, but
no.
I'm being silly with my analogy in a way, because
yeah.
it's very out there, but can... Yeah. When there is a liberal attitude, it means that it can be exploited because people aren't necessarily picking up these documents.
No, you're right. It certainly could be exploited and is by charlatans outside the medical system.
And I don't necessarily mean charlatans. I mean, she might really believe that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because that's not deliberately deceiving.
It's a genuine belief, but
yeah.
Again, there's a lot of genuine beliefs that we perhaps ought to walk around.
Absolutely.
But I think one of the issues that... It is probably unwise to put acupuncture in the undergraduate education.
Undergraduate, brilliant.
I think
yeah.
you need some experience in physio first before
right,
you start
right.
to do this. I've tried it both ways. I mean, I've taught masters and I've taught undergrads. And the undergrads were incredibly enthusiastic, but they really didn't have the time to do it. And, you know, it was a six-day course. It ran through one of the terms at Southampton University. And it was excellent. It was lovely to do. And they enjoyed it and I enjoyed it. And I think they probably learned quite a lot. But I suspect very little of it got carried on.
Yeah.
Because they were busy taking their final exams and learning all the really important stuff that they were being examined on.
So they didn't consolidate.
Whereas,
it.
You know, my case study test and my sort of, well, I can't remember what it was now, 25 answers to questions, whatever. It was small beer, and they were moving on into a big profession. So I think, no, not undergrad. There's enough in that course already. And they really need to know the body handling stuff. That's more important.
Okay.
But then, when you've learned how to do all that, then you have another tool you could use.
So, yeah, to get the so you're suggesting that it needn't be part of the foundations. It can be added to the foundations. I think that's a really, really interesting point, for sure. And so, from what I gather, the next part of that question I said about where is its place, should it exist and be available within the NHS?
Yes.
And as a taxpayer, in light of the evidence as you are, you feel that it's yes. warranted. So we can get to economics on the issue if we
I
need to.
I think, in a way, as a taxpayer, you have to trust your physio, who is a professional, okay. and who does work with evidence-based medicine and is generally looking for the evidence base for this particular modality, some of which has been found, some of which is still up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the professional choice here is one that the patient should trust.
And if I was working under an evidence-based framework for needling a shoulder at the moment, and I'd struggle to be evidence-based and not just put the needles where I want to put the needles, is that a fair position to have, or would that be me being too...
I think most evidence would be using the points that you probably would choose. I mean, we're not talking about the esoteric yellow emperor here, you know.
There's
that's not an issue here. If you want to treat a shoulder, there are regular points for using around the shoulder joint, which have quite clear locations, and which very frequently the patient will tell you hurt. So, you know, you put your needle in or around that area, and that's a very Western way of doing it, and it's absolutely fine. And the research will mostly do that as well, because very few people attempt to get sort of the full Chinese theories, because it's very difficult.
Well, yeah, very complex. Yeah,
safety
cool.
is no issue. As far as the acupuncture is concerned, if you do a reputable training, then, you know, you will be practicing safely. If you don't, then it's your own problem, and the patient will suffer. But, you know, the ASP trainings are absolutely fine. They've been vetted and reformed and vetted and sorted out over the years. There, you can trust them.
Personally, I think that to come at acupuncture to suggest it being unsafe or dangerous, I think is a really poor line of critique. So I won't necessarily hover here for long.
No.
But to try and offer a question that maybe some of our listeners that don't share my stance on that would say it's more dangerous than not doing it. And so to put needles into people... it's safe, but it's not as safe as not.
It's more dangerous doing a manipulation than not doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some things where you take a little risk.
Yeah.
But there really shouldn't be any risk at all in the treatment. The needles are sterile, they're single use, they're disposed of and they're incinerated. You yourself, you don't need gloves because you should have washed your hands. You use a sterile needle. You don't touch the business end anyway. That goes into the patient.
Yeah.
When you take it out of the patient, again, you don't touch the business end unless you're a fool. And it goes into your sharps box. And so all of that is perfectly safe. You may drop a needle on the floor. You pick it up, make sure that's also incinerated. You shouldn't drop it. You know, you have places where you can actually set out your equipment and trays and things. It really, really shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, that was an easy thing for us to then cover, really. I'd be wrong to even offer any counter to that. I agree with that, and I don't really see that being a fair line of inquiry, but it's just one that gets thrown
it's,
in.
It's one of the scare stories.
Okay.
You know, it was out there on the red tops when they first realised that people were doing much more acupuncture.
Because that's malpractice rather than
of course it is.
Practice, yeah. No, fair enough. Yeah. And so when it comes to this idea of where to find a place, time is finite. In the NHS, we can talk about economically, but also in terms of what we're trying to achieve as physiotherapists and the idea you've mentioned that we're increasingly overstretched or at least stretched, whether the over is fair. So if acupuncture was to have a role, and therefore a bigger role from what we talked about earlier, what would give?
I think one of the things we need to bear in mind is that you probably need to give more acupuncture treatments than you do, say, exercise sessions. That is unfortunately a fact of life. You need perhaps a minimum of 6 treatments before you can really say you've done your best for the patient with acupuncture. Now, there are ways of getting around that. You can have groups of people,
yeah,
or you can actually you can arrange for patients to do it for themselves. Really don't approve of that personally, but I know a lot of people do. Doctors are quite keen on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they also have the same problem as us. They, you know, too many patients, not enough time.
I've heard about this, yeah.
Mm. Well, I'm in print as not approving, but you can whistle against the wind for only so long. I don't know what else we can do. We can certainly shorten treatments. But we perhaps just have to bite that bullet, because the real gain is going to be for the patient getting better, but it's also going to be for the health service, because they won't be needing so many analgesics. They won't be back at the doctor on Monday morning asking for some more painkillers, because you've treated them for 6 weeks, once a week, given them the exercises, given them the needles. They won't be back to the GP.
So is that the thing that gets...
So that's saving money.
That's the thing that gets displaced then, is the,
yes,
the analgesics.
I think so. And the doctors won't mind their bills being slightly lower, because they, you know, we all have problems with money right now.
Because they have... analgesics have their consequential sort of risk factors.
Not even going there.
But
yes,
they are cheap.
Mm. Well, they're easy, aren't they?
Well, they are. But I think when it comes to the physio's time being finite, I'm not aware of anything in any particular areas of study where acupuncture has outperformed exercise therapy in a particular body part. Let's use the knee, for example. We talked a bit about OA knee. When you look at the guidelines...
The Nadine Foster study, that showed that the exercise was better than the acupuncture, which was very annoying, but true.
Right.
It was run by a physio, and it was done by physios, and clearly the exercise intervention was a good one.
Yeah.
But when I say better than, I think that's not strictly true, but it wasn't very much...
Yeah.
It wasn't very much better, but it was better.
Yeah. And how do you mean it was annoying?
Well, I'm rooting for the acupuncture side,
right,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's all right, yeah, fair enough. No, I wondered if that's what you meant. I wondered if you meant that there was anything in the trial that was
No, it was a good trial.
Fair enough. And when exercise therapy was it was one side of the fence or the other, if it was a fair fight, exercise therapy perhaps offers something that treats the
well, it still has its place. You I don't think you should have one without the other.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I am a physio as well as an acupuncturist, and yeah, you know, I can take away the pain, I hope, but at the same time, there's no use the patient's not going to get up out of the chair.
No, okay. And so in a 30-minute follow-up in which I'm seeing a patient, and part of that would be taken up with education, advice, and a part of that advice being how to engage with exercise and function and things like that.
Mm.
Which of these things I'm mentioning, if I was to, I'm not necessarily that way out, but then there was some other things such as manual therapy, some electrotherapy, some taping, as part of my package of care. Now, I'm not saying that would happen in all occasions, but with what I might call my core treatments of education and advice with exercise therapy, as well as some generalised, we could call it loosely, pacing advice, or the way in which someone might re-engage with function or work. Or these are main things that I'd probably do on a basis for pretty much everyone, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
With that, which of those might need to give for me to be able to allow...
Well, you might be able to do less advising, to be honest. In your first session, you want to sort of explain how things are going to go. And if there is pain, you can say that we're going to try and sort that out. You may have other tools other than acupuncture. I mean, you know, we are very varied in our approaches.
Yeah.
And so we should be. That's part of the skill, I think.
Yeah.
But having done that, then you're not going to keep returning to that every time. Pain is gone, the mood is lighter, possibly the sleep is better. And these are all things that you can actually take credit for.
And then, from what I'm gathering from before, the economic benefit from that for general society, if it was to increase, would then follow suit.
It's not going to do any harm, is it?
Right.
Okay. Might get more people running marathons, but
yeah. With the position, I suspect if there was a position being took by those that suggest that putting needles in people offers pain relief, but it doesn't necessarily matter as much how we do it, which I know isn't necessarily your position on it. But with that, is it therefore understandable that physiotherapy's role within that might be called into question compared to a technician or a physio assistant? Why couldn't we teach them how to put needles quite shallow around the knee?
Right.
Like we do with ultrasound, or we can teach them how to do stuff.
I don't know. I don't have a view on that because it's never really been suggested seriously.
Oh, okay.
And I would say not. Actually, I think the physio aides have got enough to do already. They're very busy.
Mm. That'd be even more cost efficient, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily, because if everybody's putting needles in, then that begins to get a bit sort of crowded. You do need a quiet place to put somebody. Even if you're putting people in a chair around a room, that needs to be quiet for the length of the treatment.
Okay.
You know, they need to be able to relax. If people are buzzing in and out and they're doing it fast and,
yeah.
You know, 10 minutes in, 10 minutes out, now go and do your knee jerks with this gentleman down here. It's not quite conducive to allowing whatever changes we're making in the system to be sort of seen through.
I see what you mean, yeah. I think my main model for mentioning that is because of physiotherapy assistants being used for electrotherapy modalities,
yes.
And for their involvement in certain rehab groups and things,
yes.
Like that.
And so, and that's nice, and it's good, and they're helpful, and, you know, we couldn't do it without them. I just don't... To me, at the moment, it's probably a step too far. I think that you do need quite a lot of experience to be able to use acupuncture well.
Right.
And I sort of... I don't know.
And I suppose that's the mark.
Am I just being dog in the manger here? I'm not sure.
No, I think considering...
think there is experience is needed. And it isn't a button that you press. It is a little bit more than that.
I think that makes sense, considering if experience and skill to administer acupuncture is held in regard, then it would make sense, therefore, for it to be administered by physiotherapists. For those that deem it to be a less skilled act, and for experience to be less valuable, I suppose those questions might creep in if it was to find a place.
Yes, I mean, we've had enough trouble with the professional acupuncturists over the years anyway.
Yeah.
You know, they call us weekend warriors because we have such a short training, and really it's not enough.
I see. And so we'd end up throwing fuel on that fire again if we were to try and start delegating towards technicians, etc.
I mean, already, okay. You know, we get quite annoyed when they do exercises, don't we? So, you know, there are professional demarcations,
okay.
That right. Are not always very wise, but sometimes they're just traditional.
I see. No, it's a really understandable position on it. One thing I was going to just try and backtrack to, which I forgot to, was your own research around stroke. And so when it came to the development of case studies to make, case series to make, MSc theses and RCTs that then eventually became your PhD to investigate relatively new stroke.
Yes, there wasn't very much work previously done,
yeah.
In the West. I mean, the Chinese have obviously...
have done a lot of it. So it was the influence of acupuncture on stroke patients, and you'd done a control group, and we talked about that. Now, with that, the results being that it didn't demonstrate a favourable response, at least statistically from what I gather, and in doing so, what were your...
It wasn't strong enough to be... particularly interesting,
right.
but
yeah, yeah.
You know, with research you have to state what it is you want to measure,
mm.
And you have to measure it, and
yeah.
Then you can talk about
absolutely,
it
absolutely, yeah.
Well, the one thing I didn't state that I was going to measure was the actual mood and well-being of the patients, and what I found was at the end of a year,
yeah,
more of the acupuncture patients had gone home, quite, you know, it's quite a significant figure, than had gone into sheltered care or into homes or died.
Right. And would that not have been...
I think that may just well be that they were more motivated. Their recovering was better.
And would that not have been picked up on the functional measures?
Not really, because it wasn't quite the same thing. I didn't state where people were going to go.
Ah, okay.
So I had them coming in from a variety of places, from home, from sheltered accommodation or from old people's homes,
right,
residential homes. But I didn't actually say that I was going to say where they went.
So someone functioning at a certain numeric level on a questionnaire at home would be the same numeric level under in
exactly.
care circumstances.
Not necessarily going to be highlighted.
So there's always a story behind every conclusion,
is.
Isn't there? And so that's been postulated.
I found the same talking to someone who's done some recent work in the States just again at the weekend, and she found something similar. And she also didn't designate it as being something that she was going to measure.
Right.
So, you know, you can... You can be caught
out. These corners of practice that are difficult to tease.
We did get a paper out of it, George and I. We did put one out, saying that we thought perhaps that the motivation was increased in this group because of this.
Okay.
But you know, people are going to look at it and say,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not a wonderful finding, but it was very clear it was there.
And do people come at you with that and suggest that? When you went to try and test as to whether it was going to have an influence, when it then showed less of an effect than you were maybe expecting and what you found clinically, did that necessarily, some would make a case for that nullifying that line of inquiry significantly, for it to be that you wouldn't weight acupuncture within stroke patient use or in neurology for that reason?
You'd think that, but every 4 years, I think it is, the stroke... No, who is it, does it? It's the physicians, doctors. I don't know who is it? It's probably the BMA, actually. Anyway, whoever it is, there is a regular review of research which comes out, research on the treatments that can be given for stroke and the care of stroke patients. And acupuncture's been in that for the last... four times, and I've been asked to actually review the literature, and there is new literature, and it does come through, and it is of a mediocre standard, but it's there, and they're still looking at it. So I think it's interesting that it is still being regarded as a, you know, slightly off the wall, but a possibility. But I still think if I have stroke tomorrow, I should make sure it's in my will.
Right, I see.
My treatment program. I would like to be treated. Thank you.
And I suppose that's a great way of putting it. Just put it on personally, or with yourself, or your friends, or family. Is that you? So you would advocate that acupuncture. If you were to have a stroke, you'd have acupuncture alongside.
If you get in there quickly, then it's actually very useful indeed. You get in there with the clot busters, and you get in there with the acupuncture, which appears to have an effect on the brain. Certainly increases circulation.
Right.
So you can't have it if it's a hemorrhagic stroke, that's got to be checked. But if it isn't, then, you know, get in there as soon as possible.
So I mean, I have to admit that I'm going to dance away from my field of practice being musculoskeletal. With the stroke stuff, so I'm in your wheelhouse now. But say you were to have a stroke tomorrow, God forbid, let's touch wood, but let's say that was to happen, then... And you were to have half an hour of physiotherapy provision a day, which is very poor, right?
We've made it. In China, they put you in bed and they give you acupuncture twice a day. Don't do anything else.
Well,
no passive movement.
This is what's interesting, I suppose.
That's why I wanted to go into the research.
So when we then were to suggest that you were to have half an hour, the reason I'm doing that is say half an hour a day of care in the first however many weeks, then what would you design that care to be? What would it entail?
Well, I don't have anything to go on other than the Chinese model. I would like to see acupuncture being given as soon as possible, which would be as soon as you know there's no bleeding. So it could be in the first week, or it could be after you've sorted out the bleeding problem.
Yeah.
Because it does, we've proved, that there is research that proves that it increases blood flow in the brain. Which is great if you want to get rid of the clot and everything, but not so good if you're bleeding still.
Yeah.
The sort of first thing. But then I would want my physios there as well to do passive movement, to do active movement. And I would continue with the acupuncture throughout.
Yeah.
So you would get maybe half an hour of acupuncture a day.
Yeah.
I mean, are we looking at cost initiatives?
Well, no, I suppose I'm just... Yeah, well, I am. I suppose I'm meaning that if we were to make this hypothetical... This hypothetical situation in which where time is finite and you've got half an hour a day in which you've got and that's that's
endless money,
what would it look like?
Time. That would be the idea.
Well, that's it. But because we don't, as trying to find a pragmatic solution, it's a bad example in some ways because you could self-administer some of this care yourself. But let's imagine
not
that
immediately after your stroke.
Well, that's a great point. Sorry, again, I show my naivety in this field. But when it comes to this, I'm just sort of, if you were to design, what would that half an hour look like? I'm trying to work it out.
It would look like relaxation. You would just simply apply the needles where you wanted to put them.
Yeah.
This would be following more Chinese protocols than Western ones, really. And just leave the patient to relax for half an hour.
And that would be what you would have the physiotherapist do rather than sit you up on the side of the bed.
Yeah, they could go and walk all the other patients in the ward while that was happening, couldn't they?
Right. Okay.
I mean, you know, obviously you'd fit it in with all the other things you had to do,
but if you weren't fitting
it
in,
immediately after stroke, then yeah. I wouldn't be very active with them in that time.
Yeah.
Passive movements, yes. Maintain range of movement, yes. But not really very much active until you've got them.
Because I'm just thinking, I don't mean alongside, I mean if we had to exclusively think, we've just got half an hour and we're not going to do anything else a day, and I know it's a silly hypothetical, but if we were to, I'm just wondering how heavily would you, where would it be on that priority list, I suppose? Top of it?
Mm.
Yeah, apart from the clot busters, you've said. So you do medication.
Yeah, I mean, the medication and the doctors get in there first to do what they need to do.
But as far as physiotherapy goes,
they've got to minimise the damage.
Cool.
But having done that, then physio should be, the acupuncture should be there straight away.
That was where I was just wondering about the pecking order. So I think we've been able to tease that out. It'd be held in high regard in that circumstance.
The thing that also needs to be said, then, is that it needs to go on a lot longer than it does now. Because you and I know that you can still get recovery after this magic 6 weeks or whatever.
Of course.
You can still get something happen.
Absolutely.
And there's no doubt in my mind, you know, having worked in a neuro unit, you can get some at 6 months. You might even get some at a year. Because if the patient's been neglected all that time, there's actually a bit you can pick up on.
And those provisions, we've had Karen Middleton, who's the chief exec of the CSP, is asked to come on the show, and so I'm going to probably delve into some of these little political and policy-related issues with her, because I think it's a great point, and I think that extends far beyond acupuncture and anything
else.
It's a great point, and something we're all clearly passionate about is that we need to make sure that we're championed, not stifled, and so it's a great point, and one we could probably even end on, because I think it's a really favourable point, and that whilst the jury remains out, we need to be having these discussions openly and honestly and passionately as we are doing, but also with a wry smirk towards either end of a spectrum. So I really thank you for that. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug or promote with regards to where listeners can find out more about you and more about the AACP?
Just make use of the AACP. It's there to help you. Chris Ireland is the professional advisor, and if you have a problem, he's someone to ring up and talk to. And the paperwork they produce is excellent. The commissioning book is really good. If you haven't got one, get one. It's not really just for commissioning. It just tells you, how to defend your practice while you're there and doing it.
Yeah.
And the evidence base is always changing.
Well, we'll be sharing all the resources that we've discussed. Me and you will exchange a few emails, make sure that we put them onto our newsletter, out to the listeners that have signed up on our website for that. And try and get people. We always try to have we're never going to cover everything in an hour. And so instead, what we're going to do is try and facilitate further reading, further lines of inquiry that our listeners can take. And if they were to try to get in touch with you, it'd be via the AACP and to hopefully bump into you in some of their events.
Yes, I'm contactable through the journal.
Fantastic.
And read the journal.
Read something about
it's
it.
It's good fine. Stuff. We slave over this stuff.
Fantastic. Well, and thank you so much for your time. That can't be underestimated. It's been lovely to meet you. Really great chats about all sorts of things on and off the microphone. So I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers. So there you have it, session 28 with the AACP, who have foundation courses all across the country. In fact, there's 23 currently listed on the aacp.org.uk website. Their annual conference is imminent, so sign up on their website to attend on the 13th and 14th of May, as I'm sure there'll be lots of discussion around acupuncture's role in physiotherapy, furthering all the chats that me and Val have just had.
Above all else, I'm really waking up to the fact that true professional reform is going to require far more than just waving research papers at each other. Disputes regarding styles and types of practice are not going to be solved by education alone. Complex belief systems are passionately lent on by acupuncture advocates and nihilists, much like in broader areas of society such as politics and religion. In all corners of life, we should be open to discussion, and for that I again thank the AACP for approaching us to put this together. They really are far from an underground sect who won't engage. But as my discussion with Val shows, their interpretation of the literature and perception of pragmatic best practice is very different to those on guideline panels and many of those assessing the MSK health economy. I think we're in trouble if we hold our autonomy in such high regard as to protest at anything less than the permission to do literally whatever we like. But I also think we're in trouble if we alienate large sections of the profession by ridding them of their prized modality without offering thorough explanations of how to implement alternatives. Personally, I'm increasingly struggling to find a place for acupuncture in my practice, having improved my outcomes since phasing it out. But admittedly, my less is more approach might be related to my liking of my own voice too much. So I can be occasionally found supporting colleagues who wish to use acupuncture from time to time, especially in difficult situations when managing patient expectations. It seems intuitively caring to advocate a relaxing and pain-relieving treatment, especially one that's novel and sought after. But I'm often left wondering, much like giving way to both the left and the right when driving at a roundabout, is it superficially kind but practically detrimental? Lots to think about. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Twitter at @TPMPodcast and at @Chews_health. Also on Facebook as the Physio Matters Podcast and under my name, Jack Chu. Also, today's podcast sponsor, the AACP, are on Twitter at @AACP_physio and on Facebook under AACP. The more feedback we gather, the more likely it is that we're able to put together a debate on these sorts of topics, so please get in touch. You've been listening to the Physio Matters podcast, discussing physio matters because physio matters. Bye for now.